Are you ready for this? It's your Pod Blast. It's the full Ashes Review 2014. We discuss England's 12-step programme to recovery, but will they admit they have a problem and seek to make amends to those they have harmed? Find out in the next 30 minutes of Dry January Sober Analysis, brought to you exclusively by All Out Cricket Magazine and the Cricket Pod Blast. Hello and welcome to the All Out Cricket Pod Blast podcast. Ross, England have hit rock bottom.
They have, Al. They need 12 steps to bring them back to the world of recovery.
Okay, so with this AA-themed recovery podcast, here to diagnose and make a moral inventory of England's failings, we have, first of all, Deputy Editor of All Out Cricket Magazine, Joe Harmon. Joe, how are you?
I'm feeling okay. Feeling surprisingly chipper. There is a state of high excitement in the office, as there always is when we secure a big name interview.
What's the big name?
Who is it? Sting?
Former third choice England goalkeeper, Crystal Palace legend, safe hands Nigel Martin.
Not Nigel Martin.
Will be in the upcoming, perhaps potentially not that one, but he's going to be in All Out Cricket soon. Big, big interview, and you can all look forward to that in the coming months.
When is the next issue?
It is out on January the 30th, I believe, Phil. Mm-hmm. Is that
right? Fantastic. And we'll be coming back to that in a little while with a bit of self-promotion, Ross. But while we're doing the rounds, here, looking a bit sheepish in the corner, I have to say, editor of All Out Cricket Magazine, Phil Walker.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Did you have a very nice time in Australia?
Oh, I had a splendid time. Yeah.
Any particular cultural
highlights?
Just one
big song and dance. the art gallery in Adelaide, that was nice.
I do hear it's lovely, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Did you? Yes.
I hear it's very, very lovely.
And I had quite a few days off as well. Good. Generally days 4 and 5 of every test match.
Yeah.
How
what did
you
do
on
those days?
Yeah.
Oh, you just lie in and cry a little bit and contemplate the point of everything.
As editor of All Out Cricket, how does the day off system work? Do you get up in the morning and write yourself an email saying, I'm planning on taking the day off?
You go down to the ground and you pick over the carcass, essentially. That's what it was like. It was an eye-opener for a month when I was out there. Mm-hmm. There were some thrilling moments. And watching Johnson, and we have to acknowledge that, watching him, day 3 at Adelaide, I've never seen anything like it. But it was increasingly bleak. And it was felt from, you know, the top brass of English cricket all the way down to the journalists and the fans who were there, who were suffering with the rest of them. 46 degrees in Perth as well wasn't too easy.
Yeah, 46 degrees is a bit hot. Some of our more accusatory listeners have pointed out that you weren't present in 2010 when England won.
No, this is true.
And that you were present when we were whitewashed 5-0 this Christmas. Mm. And so maybe the ECB needs to be looking in your direction.
Yeah.
Also worth pointing out, Phil was present in 2006-07.
No!
Jacques
Hughes! Seen 5, lost 5 is my record. 5-0. My very own Walker Wash. So... I'm not going over to that benighted, godforsaken country ever again.
Well, I'm no alcoholic, but I hear on the grapevine, Ross, that the way to begin a 12-step programme is to admit that you've got a problem. Have England admitted they've got a problem?
Well, we spoke a little bit beforehand about a few England cricketers saying, look, I've not got a problem with my technique, but I am solving it. There were some mixed messages coming out.
I recall the trot interview just before Christmas.
I recall
Christmas.
Some of those. Do you think it's going to be a big stock take of England, the cricketers, everything within there, guys? Phil, do you think there's going to be a lot of stock taking going on after hours?
Well, they're in full denial mode at the moment, it seems. Cook is lauding his boys for sticking at it. Collier is coming in there and saying that Flower can have the job forever. They are very much churning out those kinds of lines at the moment. It's damage limitation, and yet this very afternoon we hear this bombshell about Peterson and Flower,
this alleged story
that potentially a condition of Flower staying on in the job is that Peterson no longer plays for England in the game. This is currently press talk, but it's very interesting that certain heavy hitters in the press box have come out with this, Mike Selby being one of them on The Guardian. He's very well connected. I would have been shocked if Selvie had run this story without him having had a nudge from the England management that something is afoot there. So stock taking, yeah, I mean, it's going to be a midnight raid, but we just have to wait and see how it all ends up.
But the Flower Peterson thing is almost a sense of denial in itself, because Flower clearly thinks that Peterson is such an issue that this is perhaps a significant reason behind why the series is gone.
So but to summarise then, you're saying putting blame on Peterson is an indication, maybe evidence of Flower being in denial.
Well, it is. If he thinks Peterson is that culpable that he can't continue in his job with Peterson there, which, as we said, is speculation at this stage, then that really suggests that Flower hasn't acknowledged a lot of the other issues that are there, which have clearly held. Because he is, after all, talking about a batsman who finishes the series as their leading run scorer.
That's albeit, correct. Yeah, even though with an average less than 30. Yeah. It's time to talk about the environment. And now, I don't mean the flooding in the southwest of England. What I mean is the team environment amongst the England side.
I see.
And something jumped out at me about the team environment, which is as follows. They try to create an environment where players can fulfil their potential and play as best as they can. But in a mood of dissent, of collapsing morale, and of maybe even arguments amongst the England side, two players responded by having their best series in a long while. And that's Stuart Broad, and also on his debut series, Ben Stokes. What do we conclude from this? I've concluded, Ross, that Ben Stokes and Stuart Broad are sociopaths.
Yes, well, they have said that there were three players within the team that were found under social conditioning and testing to be good under pressure,
who
to react
they?
Well to hostile pressure.
Well, that was Pryor as well.
Pryor Peterson.
Pryor Peterson and Broad, I think, were the men.
What this about? Was the same press conference when Broad said, "We are silent assassins," in a rather smug and congratulatory way, and held up the newspaper which tried to silence him the very morning of day one at Brisbane. It's one of those lines that kind of comes back to
I'm really enjoying Broad at the moment. He's like Spencer Matthews in Made in Chelsea. He's quite the villain.
Lost me.
It's about time, isn't it, Joe Harmond? And instead of talking about who should be coach, to split the England coaching, not amongst formats, but amongst personality types. And we could have one England coaching setup, which is just, they throw monkey feces at you. They don't let you sleep in bed. They make you really angry all the time. We put Stuart Broad there. We put KP there. We put Pryor there. We put Stokes there. In the other one, whale music, massage, general esteem building. In goes Alistair Cook, Ian Bell. And we just basically have two parallel sides. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Joe?
Absolutely. It's a natural progression from splitting the coaching. You have a coach for Test cricket, ODI cricket, 2020 cricket. The next progression is you have several coaches depending on the personalities of your players.
And I would like to know who your choice of coach would be for the sociopath side. Because I suggested for a moment that maybe Dominic Cork would be a good man, or maybe Nasser Hussain.
Charles Colville, perhaps?
Yeah, nice. Play the Colville card.
Colville play the Colville card.
Never fails.
Maybe we could bring in Merv Hughes on that one.
Hussain's supposed to be quite an aggressive character as a captain, they've said, haven't they?
That's correct.
That came out in AOC's Fantastic Swan interview.
Well, who needs the Schofield report when we've used that amount of analysis on the England coaching setup? So yeah. Take it away with you. That's a freebie for you, Paul Downton, right here on the All Out Cricket Pod Blast podcast. I think it's time to make a fearless moral inventory of England's failings, don't you, gentlemen? And where shall we begin? Shall we start with the top order batting, Joe?
Yeah, but that means criticising Michael Carberry, doesn't it?
And I don't like that.
The problem is, everyone said, oh, he's such an unlucky cricketer. He's got his big break. And actually, he's even more unlucky than we thought he was, because he gets a chance. And there was one series that he should never have been... Well, he deserved his chance, but actually, in retrospect, I think we'd have all rather he wasn't there, because it's all been... Been a bit painful for him. He probably won't play for England again.
Dare we say it? I think that's right. Ross,
in Test cricket, corner. In Test cricket, he might get an
ODI run.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult for Carbs, isn't it? He's just too old. Although, just on age at the moment.
He's just too old.
Can't say that.
Is there anything? All this work, we did 2 years to get Michael Carberry into the England team. Then he said he's just too old.
Never carry more baggage than you can just... leave behind and walk away from.
Exactly.
I've watched Heat. Have you watched Heat?
Listen, Al.
The De Niro.
While we're on age, in fact, I wanted to make a point about the top order, because I think that's where most upheaval is going to take place. I certainly think so. I think in terms of pace bowling, I can see that not changing too much. We might come on to that in a moment. And there's a queue of people lining up to bat 5 and 6, but they don't fancy it up the top. I think they've got to go with a little bit of experience. There's been a lot of talk about the Sam Robsons, maybe sort of Alex Lees, younger cricketers coming in. But I think they really would be well served by looking more at, and let's touch on another campaign, Moeen Ali, the Varun Chopras, actually.
This is exactly the point, in fact, I was going to make, and it just shows that great minds think alike, because the England, everybody's going, oh, you know, we'll choose Borthwick, or we give Root a run, or Besser. These are promising young cricketers. But don't we want 25, 26-year-olds, guys that know their own game and have potential to be developing the England side now? Not a bunch of 22-year-olds, Phil Walker.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Well, Root opens the batting from now on with Cook, and Bell bats 3. So I think that's done for the next 5 test matches. Barring broken fingers and disastrous runs of form, I think that's your top 3. But what happens after that is interesting. And just because, say, Moeen Ali bats at 3 for Worcester doesn't mean to say he can't bat 4 or 5 for England. The Peterson spectre obviously hangs heavy over the whole team. But I'm all for what you're talking about there. I think county cricket provides for the England side and has done successfully for 10 years. And I think questions of kind of systemic problems within the structure, I think, are totally overblown. This is a system that was lauded for a decade, having produced one of England's most sustained runs of success. So I have no problems at all with looking back into county cricket to try and pick certain players out. I have no problems at all with going back to the likes of Bapara. I have no problems at all with addressing Morgan's form for Middlesex if he plays for the first month and a half.
Compton,
which is another side issue. I have no problems at all with Compton either. I think it's absolutely open season now. I think the top 3 are settled. And I think, obviously, Broad and Anderson still take the new ball. 5 test matches on unforgiving pitches does not a bad bowler make. Mm. But the middle section is fascinating. And who's going to bowl spin? Who's going to keep wicket? Who's going to bat 4, 5 and 6? It's totally up for grabs. And it's oddly quite invigorating.
Well, it'll be the most exciting start to a county season in years, because England have had maybe 1 or 2 spots to play for over the last few years. Now suddenly we're talking 5 or 6. Yeah. So someone has a kind of purple patch early season, they could come from nowhere really and actually get a chance, particularly amongst the spin bowlers. If any spinner can manage to take early season wickets, which is a tough ask in itself in county cricket, but if someone does get a couple of balls, the pressure is going to be there, the press will be on it. And what we've got to be wary about is getting into the situation we've seen Australia in, and that someone takes a few wickets, or in Australia didn't even take that many wickets and they still fancy them, and then threw them in there.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I've actually had a wonderful opportunity recently to speak to England's batting coach, Graham Gooch. And Graham says that when he falls on tough times, he likes to turn to Madonna's early 90s album, Justified. And this is what he had to say about changing the England batting lineup and making them play better. That was a fascinating insight from Gucci. Unfortunately, we talked about having to admit that you've got trouble when you're playing, but we asked KP, who's also a fan of Madonna's album Justified, exactly how he felt about the Australian tour, and he had this to say. So that's KP sticking 2 fingers up at it. Just quickly going back to spin bowlers for a moment. Tufnell today in the BBC.
He's passed it.
Said.
He's passed it. He can't bring him in out.
No, he couldn't even.
He can't even bat.
He said Ollie Rayner against Sri Lanka.
Yeah, there's something in that. He took 8 for nothing, didn't he, at the Oval on a pitch that assisted him.
And of course, bat a little bit, the Sri Lanka series is in June. A lot of pundits talking about green seeming wickets. By June, who knows?
Yeah. The spin bowling question, who replaces Swan, is probably the most pertinent, realistic question that people are asking. To me, Mark Butcher gave an interview to the website that Joe did, and I was delighted to read it, because he said he would go with Borthwick for the start of the summer, as a fifth bowler, enabled by Stokes's emergence, almost in a kind of South African role, that he comes on as a kind of golden arm rather than a reliable spinner who's allowed to develop his skills and so on in Test cricket. And for me, this was great because I took a wild punt on him when we were talking about our squads before the Ashes. Everyone laughed me out of town. It was a ludicrous thing to say. I hold my hands up.
He wasn't even playing well at grade cricket.
No, I know. I think 11 wickets at 40 in grade cricket, and there he suddenly was at Sydney. But I'm prepared to go with this completely. It's an utter leap of faith, but there's something undoubtedly sparky about the way that he plays his game. And because of Stokes, and only because of Stokes, there is a way that you can see him in that team at number 8.
Yeah, he's got an bowling average of about 20 for England. What's everyone moaning about?
Exactly. Fine. He was top of the averages.
He's massaged the figures.
But you mentioned Rayner, it's a good one.
But he's a case in point, though, isn't he? He's never been talked about for England before. He hasn't come through any academies. He had one good season, not exceptional season, had a good season. I mean, we watched him over the Oval and looked
he looked
unplayable, but on a really, really helpful pitch. I'd just be really wary. Someone like Borthwick has been identified 5 years ago as someone worth pursuing.
You're coming around to this, aren't you?
Swan hadn't retired when we last talked about this. Joe, and Monty hadn't played his last game.
I don't want to put you on
England.
The spot, but do you know the answer to this? Who are the spinners on the Lions tour on the 2nd of February in Sri Lanka? They're not taking Kerrigan on this one.
Kerrigan is going on that one. Okay. So he was going to go with the performance programme, but they decided not to take him on that, to let him train with Lancashire and then send him with the Lions.
I see. So this could be Kerrigan's opportunity.
Well, Kerrigan has to... For me, it's Kerrigan or Borthwick. If you play a spinner at all, the other option would be to play Moeen Ali as the batsman who can bowl a few overs of spin, as does Root, as does potentially Peterson, who knows.
Amen.
And then you don't necessarily need a frontline spinner all the time, but that's short-term thinking. They do need to identify someone who is going to be their spinner.
Do they need to? What's wrong with Monty?
Firstly, Monty, I don't think, plays for England again.
Why is that?
Why? I think they've run out of patience with him. I think... his collapse at Melbourne was so painful to watch, and it was quite telling that Cook turned to Root first. And it wasn't just because left-handers are wrong, because he turned to him again when Watson came in. I think Panesar, with everything that's gone before, and let's be honest, he's an average, he's an ordinary spinner, unless the pitch is providing something for him. And with his limitations, to say the least, elsewhere, I just think they've reached that point with Monty. He's had a decent career here and there. He's won test matches for England. I think they've probably had enough of Monty now.
Now I can't say in good faith we're starting a new era of sorts, or whatever the quote was, and then pick Monty again. I don't think. If we're looking at people, if he's saying some people have come to the end, I don't think that's... It's obviously not Bell, it's obviously not Cook. It shouldn't be Peterson, although that remains to be seen. So then it is people like Monty who have had ample opportunity, yeah, haven't really done it, and have come out looking worse than a lot of other people on this Ashes tour, which is saying something.
Well, when Phil said that on their days off they went to the ground to pick over the carcass, I thought they were talking about Monty Panesar. I mean, he really did die a death in some of those tests,
yeah,
along with many other cricketers.
I felt sorry for him because I thought he bowled all right at Adelaide, and he was unlucky on the first day, and he had that kind of series hinging dropped catch by Carbs at the death on day one. He'd have taken 3 on day one and he might have settled himself in, but when he turned up on day two and Clark got after him, after that it's just been a painful experience to watch him, and let's not single him out. There's been alarming collapses, individual collapses within the team framework from player after player.
All right, well, let's pause there just for a moment so we can have a mindless jingle before coming back and hopefully having a chat about the other positions as we continue our moral inventory of England's decline.
Moral inventory watch. Guys, we heard some really revealing stuff both from Jared Kimber and Mark Butcher in recent pieces for this magazine and for other publications. What was it like, Phil, to be around the atmosphere of the England team being out there?
It was quite marked at certain points how introverted they'd become quite early on. And I was on the same plane as them moving from Brisbane to Adelaide, and there was no communication at all, really, between the players. And they're all locked into their iPods and so on. And this was in light of the Trot story, so maybe they'd been shaken by it. But I think one of the things that's jumped out from this tour is that it's quite an introverted collection of blokes, really. And with Swan's removal now as well, there are no obvious kind of characters who are really going to whip it up, you know, and who are going to maybe grab this sinking ship, you know, and then steer it in a different direction.
I think you misjudge Boyd Rankin on that one, actually.
Yeah. He's a bit of a joker.
Big Boyd. And it's interesting, we mentioned the silent assassin thing from Broad. Well, you know, Flower is very self-contained and buttoned up, and Cook is the same. And when things are listing, you look to those kinds of characters for a little bit of inspiration. And I think England really struggled on that score. I think there was a kind of a joylessness at the core of it that was quite established quite early on. Speaking to a couple of other journalists as well, they called it up really early. George De Bell in particular called it up to me straight after Brisbane. And we were all reeling from the trot story, but he called it out. He said, this is just a disaster tour. And this noticeable. Was 1-0 down, 4 to go. And he said, this is just a disaster
and
tour.
And it was noticeably different than other overseas tours. Because I wondered about Tired
other
for a
disaster
moment.
Tours.
Well, not just other disaster tours. They talk about how tiring it was to do back-to-back. And I thought that was odd, because in 2012 they played South Africa, and after exactly the same gap, went and played in
it's
India.
It's all about defeat. I mean, if you win a game, then you're buzzing to play the next one. But if you're collapsing time after time, then you dread getting out of bed in the morning, let alone going to face Mitchell Johnson.
Wow.
But talking about team environments, I mean, Joe talked to Butch earlier, and you talked to him, didn't you, about the psychology of defeat when you're in that team environment.
He was talking about his first Ashes tour, and what was interesting, he had 2 points. He said, first of all, when things start to go wrong, not long before the batsmen become one group and the bowlers become the other group. And the bowlers start thinking, well, hang on, we managed to keep them down to whatever it was on a decent pitch. Why can't you stay out there for more than 80 overs and give us a bit of a rest?
They're right though, weren't they?
And then the batsmen start going, well, hang on, these guys are swinging around corners at 95 miles an hour. Why can't you get them out for 140? So he said those factions coming quite quickly, and you can only speculate if that's happened in the dressing room, but obviously things aren't happy. And he said the other thing, and you referred to Jared Kimber's piece where he talks about the environment where the players just look bored as Andy Flower was talking to them. And that is exactly what Butch said on that. He said on that tour, you get to the point where usually you take the bits that you need from a coach and you filter out the rest. But he said you get to a point where everything is just kind of white noise and you don't want to hear it anymore. You just want it to stop, basically. And that seemed really clear, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney, that they basically just wanted it to stop. There was obviously no way of turning around what had already happened. So they're just on a hiding to nothing. It was a terrible advert for while South Africa and India were playing out of Test series, which was a great advert for 5 Test series whilst playing 2 Test matches. At least from England's point of view, they were showing a terrible advert for 5 Test series when things start to go wrong, because there was never going to be an even contest in that series after Adelaide.
What the secret to success, in my view, and I know very little about these things, is honesty. And this
Where's
is the
this
kind
come
of,
from? Continue.
When I think about this England side, my mind turns for some reason to the All Blacks, who are at present setting maybe one of the great sporting dynasties of modern times. And in the 2011 World Cup, when they were at home and they were under pressure, they told their coach, you don't need to give us team talks anymore. We're responsible for how we perform. Come and listen to them. If you've got something to add, go ahead. But there was a leadership structure there with 15 guys where they took responsibility for it and pushed themselves through, because they said, we're elite athletes. There's not very much you can tell us. Add input if you've got a bit. And I got the feeling with the Jared Kimber piece that England were just sitting and listening to another Flower lecture. So I'll come back to honesty, which is Flower being particularly honest in the way he deals with the media and the way he deals with the team? Are the team being honest with each other? Or does levity allow for honesty? And
look,
that's what Lehman's introduced.
We can't let honesty enter sport. What would be going on? There'd be interesting press conferences. There'd be people saying they're really worried about the upcoming game. They don't feel very good about themselves. They're a little tired and a bit down. I've just had an argument with my wife. It's all going to go to... You know, if that had happened, England players would have actually been running up to the cameras saying, please get me out of here during
Help
the
me.
Third test. Help me, I'm trapped.
Well, that's pretty much what they did, isn't it? I mean, Graham Swann did it.
Yeah, he rather did.
I wonder, all right, how's about, instead of honesty, wicket-keeping?
Nice. Yes. It's one
that's
of the other
very
ones.
Good.
Segue.
I wanted to go on to that.
Well, how's about honest wicket-keepers?
Honest wicket-keepers. Now, I want to talk about this because I've always felt that we've had really good wicket-keeping options. We suddenly get to the point where the gloves are going to change hands. And who have we got, really? Have we got anyone primed
hang on,
and ready?
Hang on. Yeah, gloves aren't changing.
Gloves aren't changing.
No.
No.
Why did they drop him then?
Well, that, I mean, that's a good question. First, the first big question is why they took Best over as the reserve keeper when he's patently, obviously, not the second best option. They don't fancy him as a batsman. They kind of took him as a half batsman because he could keep wicket. So he's basically doing nothing and showed it was an embarrassing.
He's an excellent 12th man. And he's a team man.
Great in the changing room. Well, I have no idea. So, yeah, I mean, the keeping option prior, they obviously thought he was completely shot. Took him out for those two games. I think it was just temporary measure. I'm sure he'll be there come the start of the summer. He needs to turn things around quickly, and I'm sure Joss Butler will be hopefully told that he's next in line and that he can go and score some early county runs, then he'll be in amongst
the other one. The other one for me is Kiesvesser. I think he's a really, really good cricketer.
Me too. I've always thought he's great.
I think I'm watching a group of men who have completely deluded about the state of England wicketkeeping, because there is one very fine wicketkeeper at the right age who's experienced and ready to step up, and his name's Stephen Davis.
Yeah, another one.
And he's not another one. He's the one.
He's the only one that can do it. Well, yeah, I mean, I just think, and I'm a big fan of Pryor, but I just think since he was declared the greatest wicketkeeper batsman in the world, he has been awful. And he hasn't stopped being awful, even for an innings. I love the guy, but I actually think he will take the gloves this summer, but I don't think there's a way back for him, really.
But he's 31. We've seen with Haddon, who's, 75?
That's true.
And is better than ever. I think we can't start, particularly in the current state of England. If we had the luxury of we'd won the series and Pryor would look shot, then fair enough, we can start looking
giving
around.
Giving him an early bath.
What happened to Pryor, I don't think, was any kind of mental collapse. I think the Australians sorted him out technically, as they did to all the England players. And there's a hell of a lot of talk currently about a kind of collective psychological implosion and all of that kind of stuff. But let's just be fair. I mean, if you look at what happened, the Australians bowled out of their skins for 7 weeks straight, and they were aggressive and they were sharp and they bowled brilliantly to their plans, and Pryor was just given no room at all in that corridor outside off stump where he plays. He stays leg side, and there was nothing there for him, and they figured him out, just as with Cook. They gave him nothing short and wide outside off stump. Now, obviously, any monkey can figure out you don't give Cook width short and wide, but they had the bowlers to actually pull it off.
Yeah.
So England's players, all of them to a man, showed their limitations, which are generally masked in other series because you don't have the brilliance of those bowlers to exploit those weaknesses. But the weaknesses are well known. We've got good players, and pretty much to a man, they were on message. They were desperately trying to win this series. You saw what it was like for them. I mean, they were terrified after Brisbane, psychologically for sure, but they were absolutely committed to it. Mm. There may have been complacency arguably in the build-up, but they were absolutely in that thing. Mm. But the Aussies technically sorted them out. And Pryor was done in not mentally, not psychologically, but technically. And he got to that point where everything was scrambled.
And that release of playing a Sri Lankan attack who aren't going to be able to do anything like that this summer. I mean, I think Pryor's going to go and score a century in that Sri Lanka series, and maybe that's just delaying the inevitable until we play another really good attack, which will be not necessarily India's Siemens, but what have we got? I guess it's South Africa.
Next time we play South Africa.
It's Australia first, isn't it? Australia.
Final word on good attacks. There was some suggestion in some areas of the press, not, I hasten to add, with All Out Cricket magazine, that Australia had peaked, and that particularly with Ryan Harris and Mitchell Johnson at the ages they were, and Ryan Harris with the injury problems he had, that Australia would struggle in forthcoming years. And I just thought, they didn't even have Pattinson. You remember Pattinson in the first test?
Brilliant. Pat Cummins is outstanding.
It's not an invalid point, though. If you looked at Perth, England's average age was 29 and a bit, and Australia's was 31. And so in terms of age, if not in terms of experience, then there is something in that. I quite like the idea of Harris kind of never playing cricket ever again. I mean, what a great, great bowler he is. And almost just like the Blues Brothers car just collapsing at the end of, you know, at the end of January, and you never see him again.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. And I'd also like the idea maybe of Johnson having had that moment in his career, an incredible career for ups and downs, and you hardly ever see him again.
So big surprise then. Poetic for England supporter Phil Walker likes the idea of the main Australian bowlers retiring immediately.
Yeah, essentially that's what I'm getting.
Big shock.
Yeah.
Well, that's all we've got time for on this show. That was your Ashes Test Roundup.
Boy, and was it.
We'll be back after the ODI series on January the 27th, National Holocaust Remembrance Day. So pop it in your diaries. Ross, you had another point you wanted to make.
I just wanted to say, Mitchell Johnson, we have to... Oh, I said he wasn't going to do it. I've got to say, what an incredible bowler. He had a fantastic series.
It'll mean a lot to
him. Not turned up for the three ones before. He's won the battle, but he's lost the war.
Oh, bitter words.
You know.
Joe, are you bitter?
No, not in the slightest. Best team won. England got a bit of things to sort out. I would say please send in your questions to Nigel Martin via Twitter as well. Yeah.
Don't miss out on the opportunity to send your questions.
Ask Nigel.
Yeah.
Hashtag God. Phil, welcome back.
Hello.
And we're enjoying you back here in the studio rather than at 2 a.m.
Yeah, I feel like I'm back in the bosom of my family.
Well,
oh God, so
you're not. And but, so, Ross, maybe you just want to sing us out.
This is for you, okay? It's Ashes time. A roundup. Thank God it's over. Thank you.